Okay. It is 1:30 on Tuesday, February 26, 2013. And on this tape, you're going to hear the stories of Rosemary Field. She's the speaker, and she's representing the Monteverde family of Sutter Creek. She is currently the primary docent and caretaker of the Monteverde General Store, and it's become a museum, quite a place. Occasionally, you're going to hear the voice of the interviewer, Bonnie Evans, and Joanne Pace is on site. We're taping this interview at the Family Store Museum in Sutter Creek, California. We want to thank you, Rosemary, for participating in the Amador County Living History Project. We appreciate your willingness to preserve our county's history by sharing your memories. This conversation is being taped. The tapes will be made available to the public without charge. If you share something during the next hour that you regret saying on tape, we will make every effort to remove it before publication. And for those who are listening, Rosemary has quite a bit of material gathered, so she's going to begin talking about her grandfather, and we may add some questions or skip to some that the Historical Society has prepared for these interviews. So, Rosemary, I'm just going to have you begin talking.
All right. Well, thank you, Bonnie. The best place to start, I guess, is what I know as the beginning. My great-grandfather, Genovani, and I may be pronouncing his name wrong, but that was his name, my understanding is, when he came over from Italy. Let's see. He came over he came to America in 1860. He came to Sutter Creek in 1861. His hope was to discover his wealth in gold, and so he came to Sutter Creek in hopes of finding the gold that he had heard about, only to find out that it wasn't on the ground in easy pickings, that it was a lot of work, a lot of hard work, and that the gold mining towns and the areas around the gold mines were not necessarily family orientated, but were kind of rough, and times were not easy looking for gold. He discovered that it really wasn't something that he wanted to do, that that's not how he wanted to spend his time. My understanding was that he was a stonemason when he came over from Italy, and he continued that after he decided he didn't want to look for gold here in Sutter Creek, and he laid several of the sidewalks and the fences, put them up, and used that ability to survive here in this area. Let's see. In 1871... Rosa Levangetti, Levaggi, came over from Genoa, Italy, which is where my great-grandfather was from. And they either met here or met in Italy, and she came over later. But they both came from Genoa, Italy, and they married and settled here in Sutter Creek. They married in 1872. John, who we'll call my great-grandfather now instead of Giovanni, we'll call him John because he did have his name changed to John, I guess because it was an easier way to for people to say his name. So for the sake of this, I will call him John. And he and Rosa married in 1872 and began to build their life here in Sutter Creek. They had three daughters, Rose, Mary, and Kate, four sons, John, James, Louie, I never can get them all together, John, Joseph, James, and Louie were the sons. John Monteverde, the namesake, the first son, we'll call him John Jr. to be able to decide between the two, was the first son, and he was my grandfather. He had three children, Jack, Elise, and Edith Jane, who was my mother. Edith Jane was my mother, and I'll be calling her Jane because that's basically what she was known by. And Jane was a late child. She was the first two children, Jack and Elise, were in their teens when Jane was born. So she was a late-born child. So she spent a lot of her years in Sutter Creek with the aunts because my grandfather had pretty much established his life in Sacramento. He was the only actual son to move from Sutter Creek and establish a life of his own outside of Sutter Creek. All the rest of the family stayed in Sutter Creek, and their life was centered around the store and the property and the home. My grandfather, John Jr., like I say, went to Sacramento, and that's where he raised his family. Take a breather.
Okay. All right, we're going to continue the interview with Rosemary, who's doing a wonderfully interesting job. And we had a couple questions while we took a short break, and one being if she knows why they chose Sutter Creek, and we discussed possibly the age of her grandpa. So we're going to have her go ahead and continue her story.
Well, the way I've got it figured is my great-grandfather was 19 when he came over. My understanding is that he came over with some other family members, maybe cousins, maybe brother, maybe sister, but I have not been able to get any information in regards to that. But my understanding is he did not come over alone. I've tried to contact other family members that might have this information, but as yet no one has shared that information with me. He went to San Francisco. I don't know why he came through San Francisco, and I have no understanding of why he came to Sutter Creek, other than Sutter Creek was a large Italian community, from what I understand, and that may have been his motivation.
Sure, and the gold that you
mentioned. And the gold.
Yeah.
Right. So he discovered, like I said, that gold was not his forte, wasn't something that he really thought was going to make it for him. And so he and Rosa got married. They built the home that is still on site behind the store. And then they built the store. Let's see, the store, I believe, opened in the late 1800s. I want to say about, 1896, he established the general store. And this was a general store, so it had a little bit of everything. He became a citizen in 1879. John, his first son, was born in 1873, just to give you kind of a date outline how the time went. Let's see. Rosa and pretty much ran the store, took care of the store as the children grew. They lived here in Sutter Creek. The children went to school here. They grew up here. Their lives were in the area. I don't know a lot about their childhood. I do know that the three daughters took care of the store after a while. The main person that took care of the store was Mary, who was the eldest. Katie was the middle child, and Rose was the youngest girl. Rose had a job at the local mine as bookkeeper. So she did go out of the home and did do work outside of the home and earned an income. Mary pretty much took care of the store. Katie would help with the store, but my understanding was that Katie's main job was taking care of the house, and Rosa, the mother, after the girls became older, was pretty much the matriarch and made sure things ran smoothly and oversaw all the daily life of her family. Neither one of the girls married, because in old Italian tradition, the eldest had to marry first before the other two could. And Mary, who was the eldest, never got married. So Rose and Kate were not allowed to get married. This was a tradition. And apparently my understanding about, there was a story about Katie, was that she did have a beau, and he was apparently a salesman that would come and sell merchandise to the store, and they fell very much in love and wanted to get married. And of course, you know, the family said no, that wasn't going to happen. And apparently, from what I understand, Katie said yes, it was, and she was determined that her and this gentleman were going to get married. And at one point, this became such an issue that the sons and my great-grandfather met this gentleman outside of town, and no one ever heard from him again. So to know what happened, apparently, obviously, the gentleman was told that he needed to stay away and was told in quite so many terms that he decided that to proceed any further with this romance was not healthy. So he was never part of the family, never became part of the family. Rose seemed to be quite worldly, not in that she traveled the world, but she did a lot of traveling, more so than the other two did. There were a couple poems that I have found that were written in regards to her and her escapades. Perhaps it was because she worked outside the family store and was able to meet other people. She built several relationships with several of the people around town. Mary seemed to be very much by herself in the store, and the family was pretty much Mary's domain. She didn't seem to want to travel out beyond the family and the store like Rose did. Katie was more or less seems to be the quiet one. Not a lot was shared about her except for the story about her beau. But she seemed to be kind of put away in the house. And I've been told from some people, oldsters, that Katie may have had some bit of a special problem. But she never seemed to venture out much outside of the family store and the property, and just seemed to stay in the house pretty much. John, my grandfather, this first son, like I said, he was the only one that I know of that actually moved outside of Sutter Creek and settled in Sacramento. But his heart and everything about him was still very much entwined in the store and the family here in Sutter Creek. He would make visits here on several occasions, help with the store and help with the business and make sure everything was running smoothly financially. He was quite the financier from what I understand.
Okay, before I turn this off for another short break, you said a special problem. Do you know?
I have no idea. I only saw my Aunt Kate a few times, and I was quite young then. Mm. And I remember she was quite frail and small, and of the two, my great aunt Mary was quite the robust woman, as was my aunt Rose. They were Italian in frame and every other way. They were very much very verbal about their feelings and things going on in life. But Kate always seemed to be quiet, and she was frail and didn't talk a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And that's what I remember most about Kate. She just kind of seemed to be in the background, that there wasn't a whole lot said about Kate.
Can I just ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
About the shop? This was a lot of hard work, too. You were talking about they bought their merchandise from San Francisco.
Right.
And they themselves would go up to pick up the merchandise
right.
and bring it back with mule-driven wagons, and that it could take up to a month to just...
That's my figure. I would assume so, yeah, because we're not talking about highways and byways here. You might want to check that out with other people, but I would think it would take a month. They had four mules pulling a wagon full of product and stock and whatever else they needed to bring.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little about what type of inventory and materials were in the store?
Okay, it was a general store, so they had canned goods and flour and wheat and rice, all your basic needs. They also had linens and material to sew things with. They had hardware that was used for as time progressed. You know, they had the hardware for the wagons and things, and then when cars and automotives, they started stocking things like that for the vehicles, for automobiles. They also sold alcohol. They sold wine and liquor until Prohibition. And then, of course, they weren't supposed to sell anymore. Of course, I'm not saying that they did or didn't. But I do. My understanding is that everybody enjoyed their wine.
Mm-hmm.
So they did have wine available. They did a barter. They would barter with the general community. If someone had canned peaches or something canned that they canned, they could come in and trade for things. And then they would sell those canned goods to the miners or whoever else wanted to buy them, which would allow the miners, say, fresh fruit and things like that. They also had a pharmacy. With some really interesting pharmaceuticals, which are still in the store. It can still be seen, castor oil, different herbs that were used mixed with whiskey or other types of things to make a person well. It seems that all my aunts and my uncles were well-versed in the medical, different medical aspects and first aid and things like that. Because in the store they have books that were read and journals that they kept in regards to how to take care of certain illnesses and ways to relieve pain and sickness.
So they wouldn't necessarily get a prescription from a doctor. Someone would come in with something and they would maybe look it up or know what might help and
right, yeah.
just sell direct to the
yes.
client. And
uh-huh.
Wow. Sounds like the aunts were fairly well educated. Do you know?
They went to the schools around here. They all went through, graduated from Sutter Creek Elementary, and their diplomas are on file at the archives.
Wow.
Because I found the diplomas and I gave them to the archives donated them to the archives. They were really neat. And I know my grandfather went on into college and business school. My aunts, to my knowledge, didn't go much further than that, but I believe the sixth or seventh grades were a lot different than they are today. They had a lot more information, learned a lot more technical things about how to live and than our sixth graders do today. It was a lot different than what it is today.
All right, we're continuing with stories from John Jr., who settled in Sacramento.
Okay, my grandfather, John Jr., he worked at the age of 15. He worked nights in the gold mine, pushing the heavy carts of quartz for a dollar a day, to save enough money to be able to go to Ramsey Business College in Stockton. That was his goal. He was very business oriented, and like the rest of the family, he was a very hard worker. So he spent several years doing that. He was able, finally made enough money to go to the Ramsey Business College in Stockton. He was an assistant bookkeeper at $20 a month after that, once he graduated. And for several years, he worked as that and saved up. He was also a road salesman, which means he went out and sold wares and product to little stores like the one that my aunts and my great-grandfather had. Finally, he had enough money. He bought the Dingley Coffee Company there in Old Sacramento. In fact, it was the oldest coffee manufacturing plant in California at the time that he bought it. And he made the company run well. He was quite the financier. He worked hard. The company did well. He was selling coffee and herbs and other types of things through his company. He built a factory on 7th Street between R&S in Sacramento to make his store even a bigger, better place. When the San Francisco earthquake happened in 1906, he donated coffee to victims, thousands of pounds of coffee to victims of the San Francisco earthquake. In 1921, A.P. Giannini, who was the founder of the Bank of Italy in San Francisco, asked my grandfather to become involved with the Bank of Italy. And so he joined the Bank of Italy, and as one of the directors there, and later on the Bank of Italy, of course, became the Bank of America. My grandfather retired from the coffee business in 1936, and at that time he was quite involved with the Bank of America at this point, and as a board of director. He also joined the Native Sons of the Golden West in 1895 and became quite involved with the Native Sons of the Golden West. In 1898, he became president of the Sunset Parlor, and from what I understand, did some great financial things with them and helped them build their large building in Sacramento through donations from other businesses around.
Do you have any questions?
Okay,
back to my grandfather. I can remember as a child we would go visit him, usually every Sunday, at least twice a month, or every Sunday, depending on when my mother felt like driving. He lived over on, I believe it was 46th Street in Sacramento, and we lived in Sacramento at the time. But we would go visit him, and he was always dressed in a suit and a vest, and he always had a red or white carnation in his lapel, and he would always sit in his big chair in the sitting room. And when the visit was over, he would always call my brother and me to him, and he would pull out of his pocket all his coins, and he would give us his pennies, dimes, and quarters, and we would laugh, and we always would leave with a pocket full of some kind of coin that he would give to us and give us a hug, and it was always a good time. My grandmother, he married Sophie. Her name was Sophie Jones, I believe her last name was, and they were married. And I believe my mother was born when Sophie was 46, but Sophie passed not too long after my mother was born. But my understanding from my mother is my grandmother was a wonderful, loving person and quite involved with society and church and just a really gay, happy person. My grandfather remarried after my first grandmother had passed, and her name was Maud. I don't remember what her full name was. I only knew her as Grandma Maud. And she took care of my grandfather as in his later years. I was to understand that she was his secretary at one point in time, and that they did not have any children beyond, I think Maud had some children of her own from a previous marriage, but I don't have any information on her. I know she was a pretty stern lady, and that part of the reason my mother spent so much time in Sutter Creek was because, like I said, life in Sacramento at the time of my mother's young years was devoted to business and other things, and being a young stepchild, Maud had other things in her life happening. So as a consequence, Mom came to Sutter Creek and stayed with the aunts sometimes through the summer. And my mother seemed to enjoy her time with the aunts. They were always really close, and I think it gave my aunts, my great aunts, some interesting time because they had no children of their own. Like I say, none of them got married. And so I think they enjoyed the companionship of my mother.
So we're looking at a picture of the Monteverde family, and I'm just Rosemary was telling us some stories about some of these uncles.
Well, Louis, who was one of the sons, was quite a colorful character. Not only did he take the mule team into San Francisco and get product and things like that, I guess he was quite the ladies' man around Sutter Creek. And I've been told by several older ladies that he would always tip his hat to the ladies. He was always dressed to the hilt and loved to dance. And in fact, my understanding was that he was going to marry one of the madams of one of the houses of prostitution here in Sutter Creek, but his mother and father and the sisters and everybody got very upset that that was not going to happen. And he didn't, but and supposedly he was never married, but yet I've come across information stating that at one time he was married from a lady who was a singer, maybe a dancer out of San Francisco. In fact, I have a letter where she is more or less telling him that if he didn't keep his promise to her, which must have been a promise of matrimony, she was going to be very upset and think bad things were going to happen. And but my understanding is from some other people that he did marry this person, that they did live in a house across the street from the big house, and that life was so bad for this woman. I guess she had a child, but not by Louis, but that life was so bad for her that she finally left, and the aunts and the mother made life so bad for her that she didn't like the small town living anyway. She liked San Francisco, so she divorced him and went back to San Francisco. That's my understanding. But for the most part, apparently Louis was quite an interesting character around Sutter Creek. The other ones, I don't know a lot about. James worked a lot around the store, did a lot of the finances of the store, kept the books. In fact, I see his name in a lot of the ledgers where he's keeping accounts. Joseph, my understanding is he died rather young, that he was quite sickly off and on, and that he was the first to die and because of his illnesses.
Well, now I'm looking at the picture here. We're in the store, so they have these all matted and framed so beautifully. Am I looking at this correctly? The women didn't marry, so there's no grandchildren through these three girls.
Right.
One of the boys died young. The other one didn't have any children. So was your grandfather the only one then that gave the original Monteverde's grandchildren?
My grandfather was the only one.
Only one out of
seven
kids. Wow.
And he had two daughters, my mother being one of them, Edith Jane. And then he had one son who was John Jackson Jr., namesake of my grandfather. He was the only son, and I believe he had one daughter.
So really, for all those people, not a lot of descendants.
No.
Not a lot of descendants. Wow. Excellent. Yeah, this is definitely, for anyone listening to this, this museum is definitely worth a trip to Sutter Creek to take a peek at all the history. They've still got the store closed in, when did you say?
The store closed in the early 1970s. My great aunt put, there's a sign over here. It says, this store will be closed for a few days. There it is. And she never opened it again. My great-aunt Rose was the last of the original family. She died in 1978, and she left the store to the city of Sutter Creek to be used as a museum.
Okay, and you said that it was left completely stocked. And unfortunately, you had to come in and clean out all of the food.
Well, I didn't, but the city of Sutter Creek came in at the time and cleaned out the store and cleaned it up, get it ready to open it as a museum.
Yeah, because it is still just packed full of all kinds of wonderful things. Wonderful things. Okay.
Okay, I'd like to talk about my mom. Her name was Edith Jane Monteverdi. She was born June the 11th of 1919 in Sacramento, California. She was the last child born to Sophie, my grandmother, and my grandfather, John Monteverdi. Sophie was 46 years old when my mother was born, and she was a late arrival for my grandfather and my grandmother. Her sister Elise and brother Jack were in their teen years when Jane was born. What's interesting about my mom, and I like to share this, she was born with what is called a veil, and it's a piece of skin membrane that is attached to the forehead and covers the face under the chin, and they called it a veil. Of course, it's removed because, you know, the child has to breathe. My understanding, it wasn't causing her any problem of breath, that it was a thin skin membrane. And I've been told by my mom that in old Italian, any child born with this has the ability to foresee the future. And that it's a very kind of scary thing for the family. It's an oddity that is taken very seriously, and it wasn't discussed outside the family to the fact that Jane was born with this veil. In fact, we still have the veil. Of course, it's dried and it's been preserved. I don't have it, but my nephews have it. My mom supposedly did have some insights and some visions, which scared her quite a bit. She was very superstitious about this. I can remember at one point she had seen a black cat on the sidewalk and turned the car around and literally drove completely around the block so she wouldn't have to cross the path of this black cat. She never burned a black candle. Those were evil, and that was something that would never, she would never allow. She was a very superstitious person, and my understanding was so was her family. I think all Italians had superstitions that they were, very tolerant of, and careful not to deal with. My mom married Harry Pratt. He was they met at the Army Depot out at McClellan Air Force Base. He was in the Air Force, and they got together. My grandfather was not really happy about the union. My father was married at the time that they met, and ended up, of course, having to got a divorce so he could marry my mother, which, again, my grandfather and his family being Italian, this just was not a good thing. But my mother is very much in love with my father, and they got together, they married. Their life as a whole was pretty good at first. As time went on, though, my mom and dad's life, there was a lot of turmoil. My dad was a salesman. He traveled a lot. Once he got out of the Air Force, he retired Air Force. He traveled a lot in his business. So as a consequence, we moved around quite a bit, which really wasn't something my mom enjoyed, but that's the life she had chosen, so that's what we did. My dad was a heavy drinker and later years became an alcoholic, which made things unpleasant for the family as a whole. The Christmases and the holidays were always arguments, so looking forward to the holidays was not a great feature of my brother and I, because we always knew how it was going to turn out, and it wasn't going to be a joyous time like so many families were. But that was our life, and life went on. My mom moved back to Sacramento after her father died, moved into the house on 46th Street, eventually sold that. And then when my great aunt Rose died, she and my father moved back here to Sutter Creek, which is where my mother lived the rest of her life out. Here in Sutter Creek, she really blossomed. You could see that she was happy to be home, the home that she loved and cared so much about. Of course, at this point, the store was being made into a museum, which she was really happy about. She opened her own business called Balloons Bazaar, went to college, learned how to become a clown, and she became a professional clown, had her own business with the balloons, did parties with balloons. She got me involved as a young woman, and we would walk up and down the streets of the Italian picnic parade with the balloons and do different festivals and things with the balloons. And for her, the last years of her life, she was very happy because she was back home. She was making people laugh. She was helping people out. She was very much into helping other people, working within different programs, working with the elderly, children, anything that she could help out with. She was a very caring, interesting person, and lots of fun, even all the way up through her. She got cancer, and so all of that with her cancer in the last 5 years, she was always a joy to be around.
Very good. Wow. So you were an adult by this time,
obviously. I was an adult by this time, yes.
But you weren't living in Sutter Creek at the time, were you?
I had moved back to Sutter Creek, but I was living in Pine Grove.
Okay.
So, and I had two sons by this time, and they were going to school here, and they were going to school in Jackson. And my youngest was in Jackson Elementary when I first moved back, and my oldest was in Jackson Senior Elementary or Junior High. And they grew up here in Amador County and attended Jackson High School at the time, and which is now Argonaut High School.
Are they still here?
No, my oldest is in Denver, Colorado with his family, and my youngest is in Vinita, Oregon, or Elmira, Oregon. I work here at Amador County Drug and Alcohol as a counselor for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
when the county first started its drug and alcohol program, I was one of the first people employed in that program. Then I also worked on the board of trustees and the school board for about 3 years, and was able to develop some programs through our drug and alcohol program to help kids that were having problems in their home or with their family. And then I decided after about 12 years of living here that I needed to move someplace else. I was getting pretty burnt out on my job. It was a lot of stress, a lot of work. By this time, my oldest son had married a young lady, Carmel White, from Ione, and they were living in Stockton. And my younger son, John Sales, he had still living with me, and he'd moved with me to Oregon. I had remarried, and Rick Fields at the time, and so we all moved to Oregon. My oldest son later moved to Oregon, him and his wife to Oregon, and he had a daughter, Jessica Sales, in Oregon. So I have 4 grandchildren now, and I have 4 great grandchildren.
You have great.
I have great.
Oh my
goodness.
Excuse
me. That's all you have great. I'm sorry. How do you?
Stephon?
No, that's not.
No. Okay, we're going to, this is probably the last segment we're going to put on here, but we wanted to backtrack a second. During the break, we were talking about the timeline of when Rosemary's mother first moved back to Sutter Creek. And I think you said she moved into this house, right?
Right.
The
right.
family home.
Uh-huh.
And she had moved here from Sacramento. And
yes.
She moved there after from Texas.
Right.
The family had been in Texas.
My father and her had a separation at that point. And my grandfather had died, so my mother moved to the 46th Street residence and was there for about 6 months. And then my mother and father reconciled their differences so that when my mother moved here to Sutter Creek, my father came with her. And my father was quite a colorful individual when he moved to Sutter Creek. Like I had said before, he had become an alcoholic before this. And when he came to Sutter Creek, a little town, it didn't take long for his reputation to become known. Harry Pratt. He was the local alcoholic of Sutter Creek for quite a few years. When my mother passed, my brother and I had the house. The house became ours because it's been handed down through each generation. And we allowed my father to live in the house until he got to the point where he could no longer take care of himself. And then we rented the house out for a while. For a few years. My brother passed about 7 years ago, quite unexpectedly. He did leave two sons, Joey and Harold Pratt, who both live in Southern California. And they come, do a yearly trek and come up to see the house and the store and remember their roots. Jerry and John Sales, my sons, come more often to visit me, and they enjoy the stories of the house. And as with previous generations, once I pass, the house and property will then go to Joey and Harold Pratt and John and Jerry Sales. And hopefully the hope is that they will continue the home, the family home, and, you know, let it stand as the name of Monteverdi, because that is one thing my great aunt always told me. I can remember her telling me, as long as your name is remembered, you will never die. And so her name has been remembered, their name has been remembered, and continues to be remembered. And I send information as I find it about the family to both my sons and my nephews. And my granddaughter, Jessica Jane Sales, who lives in Oregon also, seems to be really interested in family history, so I keep her in tabs as I find stuff. And she comes and visits quite a bit and enjoys the store and the house and the family history.
So tell us, though, now, the last we heard, you were living in Oregon. How did you end, how and when did you end up back in Sutter Creek in the house?
Well, my husband and I bought an RV, and we were going to do the traveling thing, and we did. We went to Nevada. We were there for 2 years. Then his mother got ill, and she lives in Thornton, California, and he wanted to come back and help her through her illness. And it was only going to be a temporary thing until she got well and healthy again. So we came back, and after about 10 years of living here, I realized that we weren't going to be leaving again. So I retired. Oh, let's see, when I was 62, I took early Social Security retirement, and I told my husband it's time to go home. And I was tired of living in the RV, and I wanted to come home. So we came back to Sutter Creek, and this is now where I will live until it's time for me to go on to an even bigger adventure.
Now, interesting to me, because you called this home. And I can see from the look on your face that you came home, that you weren't raised here.
No, I wasn't raised
here.
So
why? What is it about this place? Is it just the stories of Grandma and Grandpa and the aunts? And how is this home to you?
It's the feeling of I belong here, and the time and it wasn't a lot of time I spent with my great aunts, but the time that I did. Even though I was a young girl, I never really understand the attachment until I became older. And then the older I became and the more I visited here, the more I knew this was home. This was where I was going to end up and I needed to be. To carry on the name until it was someone else's turn.
So you're not anticipating donating the house to the Historical Society or Sutter Creek. The store belongs to Sutter Creek now. Was donated by one of the aunts?
My great aunt Rose donated it to the city of Sutter Creek. I've been asked about the barn. There's a barn next door, and no, I don't see me donating any more property to the city as it stands right now. I don't want the property to be sold or lost in future generations. And I'm not going to say it isn't a possibility if that becomes a possibility, because to me, this property is very important to my family. And I know how much it meant to them. And the fact that I was given a home, you know, not owing anything on it, and it was kept for me, I feel the need to keep it for my children. But if my children and generations aren't interested in it, I don't want to see it lost and torn down. So the future will be what it will be.
So this plot of land where we're sitting today, the barn, the house, and the store, all of these buildings were built by your great-grandpa.
Yes.
And have been in the family ever since,
yes.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Since the late 1800s, since he built it with his own hands.
Amazing. And now, you were here even as a young girl, so how do you see Amador County or Sutter Creek, whichever you feel most comfortable answering, what kind of differences?
In Sutter Creek, I really don't see any difference. Sutter Creek has not changed at all, even as a young girl. I mean, I can remember as a young girl coming to visit the aunt and Uncle Louie. He was still alive. And my brother and I were always told to leave the house. We were not allowed to sit during conversations. We were told to leave. Children shall be seen but not heard. And so my brother and I would go play up on the hill where the post office is now. The post office wasn't here, but we could play up on the hill. Other than, you know, a few new buildings like the post office and some things, Sutter Creek really has not changed. It's pretty much the way it was that I remember as a child. Amador County itself, it's grown, but once again, it's I find young people go to school here, but they don't stay here because the jobs aren't here. It's a good place to raise a family if you have family here that will help you support your family, but there's really not a whole lot of jobs for young people after they finish high school. A lot of the Italians are no longer here. New people have come in, different ethnic groups have come in that were not here when I was young. Like I say, it was mostly Italian when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, things in that sense have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The stories, I can remember, I was told a story one time about my great aunt. She had a Buick, an old Buick that she kept in the barn, and it was always covered. And there was a lady, I believe, across the street or somewhere in the area. They both went to the Catholic Church. And they would wait until almost the last minute before the services started to see who could be the last person in to make the grand entrance. And it seemed it was always a competition of who would make that grand entrance, be the last one in, between her and my great aunt. And I've also been told about stories of my great aunt would go down Main Street. Like, she didn't travel a lot when she got older, but she'd park that, double park that Buick. And a policeman would come up and say, "I'm sorry, Rose, you can't do that." And she would tell the policeman, "They're in my parking space, so I'll park wherever I want to." And she was very verbal and very, you know, about her place in this community.
Okay. Very self-confident.
Yes.
Very self-confident. Yes. And now, you mentioned earlier when the tape was off, and I wanted to get this on the tape, that you've donated a lot of letters to the archives, and you've gone back up there to get photographs and letters, and that a lot of the letters